all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
It's me. Hello, welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It's Friday, March 10th. Coming up this hour, Wendy Strout, Wisconsin director for the Human Rights Campaign PAC, talks about the significant stakes for the LGBTQ community in the April 4th Supreme Court race and the special election for a state Senate seat in the Milwaukee area as well. We will visit with Mark Jacob, a former editor with the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times, for our weekly overview of how national media is covering the big stories of the week. We are just a few minutes away from a weatherology update with meteorologist Michael Cairo, and we will wrap things up with UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher talking about some sports headlines as we head into the weekend. Phone lines, of course, are always an option for you at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155, and our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Nice to have you along here. Got my Friday. Usually I have an Up North News coffee mug, and I have my Friday one today that is from the Drink Wisconsinably store, which simply says, shh, this isn't coffee.
Is that true?
Mm-mm. Well, it's coffee and a lot of sugar, a lot of cream, because, you know, it's me and it's Friday. So, but it's funny. It's a good Friday mug to have.
It is.
So
it is.
I'll work on it. I'll take that. All right. Let's see. In this segment, I think what I want to do is mention that Congressman Mark Pocan spoke on the floor of the House yesterday and really took it to Republicans and talked about not just their values, but their priorities in their continuing efforts to bully, to single out, and to punish trans athletes, kids, adults alike, and really focus on scare tactics and hatred. When, if you want to have a focus on women's sports, there are definitely big problems that need to be addressed that the congressman points out isn't being done. So let's give a listen to some of what Mark Pocan had to say on the House floor yesterday.
There's real pressing problems impacting women's and girls' sports, including sexual harassment and assault, lack of equal resources, and pay inequality. There are real issues that the GOP majority is ignoring. And there are pressing problems facing kids of our nation, including nearly 50,000 gun deaths a year, including 4,700 that involve kids. But not a peep from the Republicans in Congress about something that's actually killing children. But rather than addressing any of these issues, anti-equality politicians on the Equality, Education and Workforce Committee spent their first legislative markup this session targeting the few trans girls and women who participate in school sports. This isn't about a real problem in this nation. This is part of a larger coordinated attack against transgender people and the larger LGBTQ plus population. We've seen hundreds of anti-equality bills, many specifically targeting transgender people, introduced in states across the country this year. Unfortunately, this is about building the personal brand of some extreme right-wing politicians, people who fundraise from and appeal to a small subset of their political base, rather than about a real problem in this country. These bullying politicians will endanger the lives of trans kids for their own political purposes, seemingly with the support of GOP leadership.
Again, that's Congressman Mark Pocan commenting Thursday about all of the anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ bills that are making the rounds in Washington and in state capitals around the country. Pocan points out that the Women's Sports Foundation and the National Women's Law Center are also opposed to recent attempts to, ban trans girls and trans women from participating in school team sports. Both those organizations, as well as leading women athletes, support transgender inclusion. And then there are the major athletic bodies like the International Olympic Committee and the NCAA that have guidelines for the participation of transgender athletes. And both of those bodies reject the kind of systemic exclusion of transgender people from sports that these anti-LGBTQ populations are pushing. And so, again, we wanted to point out that Mark Pocan was on the floor calling them out, saying, hey, look, if you want to talk about the pay inequalities in women's sports, if you want to talk about the lack of equal resources, if you want to talk about real sexual harassment and assault that's going on, that's great. Come on. We'd love to have your help. And then if you're going to talk about, you know, high school and college athletes and protecting them, quote unquote, how about protecting them from bullets? Lots and lots of bullets that are plaguing our high schools, our college campuses, our elementary schools, and our communities. If you want to be pro-life, if you want to claim to be protecting people, then really protect them. Don't attack them. Don't bully them. Don't exclude them. Don't push them to the brink of suicide or over it, because there's something that you don't like, that you don't agree with. If at this point you're still railing against that under a banner of being anti-woke, again, you're telling on yourself. And what Congressman Pocan is pledging to do, which is what we want to take part in here as well, is simply to say that he's going to continue to expose their bullying and their bigotry. And so are we. When we come back, Wendy Strout from the Human Rights Campaign is going to talk about the stakes for the LGBTQ population for this state Supreme Court election and the high importance of voting on April 4th. We'll be back in just a bit. You're up north. Friday morning. This is Up North News Radio. We are on Lake Wissota, which looks to have received about 3 inches of snow. The last report I saw for Eau Claire was about 4.5, but I think that was at midnight. We're up here at the northern edge of the what fell overnight. Certainly a lot more to our south. Aaron talked about, you know, it felt like several more inches than that in the Madison area. So rather than just, you know, me sitting here yodeling and guessing, how about if we bring in, you know, somebody that knows what he's talking about? That would be weatherology meteorologist Michael Cairo, who can tell us what we've seen and then what we're going to see for the weekend. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, indeed, those heavier snowfall totals did fall across, especially the southern half of the state. In and around the Madison vicinity, saw some reports of anywhere from 7 to 8 inches of snowfall. Some totals approaching the 10-inch mark, though, reported at the Milwaukee airport and up to near the Sheboygan vicinity as well, where they did get a little bit of some lake enhancement off of Lake Michigan over that way. And yes, still some lingering accumulating snowfall, especially for central and eastern portions of Wisconsin yet early on today, as much as an additional inch or two of snow accumulation, especially in areas closer to Lake Michigan yet this morning, before that snow does gradually wind down by this afternoon. Those high temperatures by this afternoon looking to range in the lower to middle 30s pretty much for all of the state. Thankfully, it won't be overly breezy for today, at least those winds out of the north to around 5 to 15 miles per hour. We get a brief reprieve from the snow then for tonight in between systems. Overnight low temperatures for tonight could drop all the way back to some teens from Wausau and points off to the north for tonight. Lower 20s for much of the southern two-thirds of Wisconsin for tonight. And then into the day on Saturday, unfortunately, another round of some accumulating snowfall headed on in from the west as a Kluber-type storm system looks to work in from the northwest. Already by your Saturday afternoon time frame, expecting some accumulations to the tune of 1 to 2 inches in areas from Eau Claire and points off to the west. Saturday's high temperatures in the lower to middle 30s statewide. In the thick of the accumulating snowfall then for Saturday night, expecting the highest snow accumulations this go-around across the northern half of the state. Wausau, Eau Claire, and points northward could pick up as much as 4 to 8 inches of snow accumulation Saturday night into the day on Sunday. More like 2 to 4 across the southern half of the state, including Madison, Milwaukee, and likewise near the Fox River Valley. For Saturday night, lows in the lower to middle 20s. And into the day on Sunday, snow is still looking pretty widespread across the state. Again, those higher snowfall totals, especially across the north. Lower 30s for highs for Wausau points off to the north, with some middle 30s for southern portions of Wisconsin there on Sunday. Sunday night, still some lingering light snow across the state, which should gradually taper off through Monday morning coming up. And then the talk next week will just be some colder than average conditions yet. Monday only talking upper 20s for high temperatures from Eau Claire through Green Bay, Wausau points off to the north, with lower 30s across the southern half of the state. Typically this time of year, those average high temperatures closer to the lower 40s for areas like Madison and Milwaukee, and middle to upper 30s even across the north. So yeah, those colder than average temperatures still with us even into early next week.
All right. Meteorologist Michael Kaor from Weatherology. Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Let's turn our attention now to the state Supreme Court election. And it is a big one. And there is always the possibility of tune out rather than turnout. And so to help with that, with the turnout over the tune out, we're bringing on board Wendy Strout from the Human Rights Campaign. Wendy, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about the endorsement that you made in that race, that your group made in the state Senate race. And you know, this isn't just a few folks here. We're talking more than 700,000 equality voters in Wisconsin. That's a lot of folks standing behind you. We can't see them now, but you're clearly talking to them about this race.
Exactly. I mean, people may not think that, you know, LGBTQ, you know, when you think about the Supreme Court, you're not really always thinking about LGBTQ rights, although the federal Supreme Court has really put a focus on our issues. But in Wisconsin, the Human Rights Campaign, which is the largest LGBTQ civil rights organization in the country, we have endorsed Janet Protasiewicz for Supreme Court because this race could not be more important to our rights. And it might not be for the reasons that you're thinking, you know, would affect our rights. It's the reason that we endorse really is, and the reason this race is important is it's really all about the maps. You know, it's about fair maps, because when, you know, when we have, you know, when voters can choose who their elected officials are, you know, they're going to have better representation. And, you know, we can see what happened in Michigan, what's happening in Michigan. In Michigan this week, they just passed amazing pro-equality legislation. And they did it because they have fair maps. This legislation they passed was bipartisan. Both Republicans and Democrats voted for it. And the reason they did it is because they have fair maps. They, the people were able to choose who their elected representatives were. And overwhelmingly, we're seeing that LGBTQ equality support is popular and it's bipartisan. And just think what we could do here in Wisconsin if we had those fair maps. And if we elected a court, you know, if we flip the courts here.
We had the opportunity a week ago to talk to James Obergefell of the Obergefell v. Hodges decision, and he gave a very impassioned plea for everybody to vote, from whether you're in a marginalized community or not, or simply an ally of them. This is not a time for anybody to be in their silos. There are a lot of silos, a lot of groups that are harmed if you have a state Supreme Court that continues to be opposed to equality. And I think that when we build that out to the diversity of your membership, you see a lot of power in those words, that this is an all hands on deck situation.
I mean, it is. I mean, if you care about equality, if you care, I mean, just the simple fact of caring that you have the ability to elect the type of legislator that you want instead of your legislator choosing who their constituents are. You know, these issues that are affected affect everyone. And, you know, if you care about, you know, equality, if you care about reproductive rights, if you care about any issue, This race is crucial to turn out for. The Supreme Court affects us in so many ways that people don't think about.
And it's not just the state Supreme Court race. There are many nonpartisan local races on the ballot as well that are important for a host of reasons at the county level, town, school boards. And then in part of the Milwaukee area, there is a special election for a seat in the Wisconsin State Senate. It was held for many years by Republican Alberta Darling, who retired rather abruptly, opening up this special election come April. It is a district that has been trending increasingly Democratic over time. And this race is important from the standpoint of Republicans not being able to have a supermajority. So again, one seat on the state Supreme Court can make a difference, but so can one seat in the state Senate. Tell us about that, Wendy.
Exactly. So the Human Rights Campaign has endorsed Jody Habish-Zinkin. And the reason we endorsed this is like, it's important. Again, you know, right now the Republicans have a supermajority, and it is important for us to flip Darlene's seat, to make sure that we can get back to the Senate being able to protect Governor Evers' veto. I mean, we're seeing legislation across the country that is harming LGBTQ plus community, harming our children, especially transgender non-binary kids. And, you know, the governor's veto has been able to protect our kids. And, you know, we're working hard to make sure that we can flip that seat and make sure that the Senate is able to continue protecting our governor's veto.
One of those issues that the legislature has inserted itself in deals with conversion therapy and whether there should be a ban on this essentially form of child abuse. Can you tell us a bit more about that and the importance of sustaining Governor Evers' wishes to ban conversion therapy?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't know, conversion therapy is a horrible practice that is used on children, and sometimes it's used on adults to make them switch their, to make them straight or what, you know, or how, you know, whatever. But it's a horrible practice. It's torture. And it's been banned in a lot of our local municipalities. But it, you know, to have a statewide ban, we're really working to make sure that we can ban this statewide and protect, the people from this horrible, torturous practice.
We are talking to Wendy Strout from the Human Rights Campaign about the upcoming April 4th election and the stakes that are there. So as we look at the candidates in the state Supreme Court race, the thing that makes this one unique is that, well, sometimes in state Supreme Court races, we know very little about the candidates. But in this case, you have in the conservative candidate, Dan Kelly, somebody with a record, somebody who did sit on the Supreme Court for a couple of years because he was appointed by Scott Walker before he was unseated in the election that followed by Jill Karofsky. But Wendy, he has a record that you and others are wanting to make sure voters know all about.
Yeah, the thing to know about Dan Kelly is he is not someone who is going to support LGBTQ plus issues. He's not going to support equality. He's really the opposite of what we want out of a Supreme Court justice. He has not really shown that he will be fair on the courts. And what we're looking for is a Supreme Court justice who will be fair, who will be able to really make sure that we have fairness in the process. And that's what we're looking for. And that's why we've endorsed Janet Protasiewicz. Dan Kelly's proven that he will not be that type of justice.
And similarly, in the 8th Senate District in the Milwaukee area, the Republican candidate in that race is an assembly rep who, again, has a known record on important issues.
Right. I mean, it is... Jody is pro-equality, like she's pro-LGBTQ plus equality. Her opponent is not. We need to make sure that we are electing people who care about equality, that we're making sure that we're electing people who are supportive of inclusion and welcoming and making Wisconsin an inclusive and welcoming state. Our legislature is not that type of state, does not want that type of state right now. We need to make sure that we're electing people who do care about being a welcoming state.
That Republican is Representative Dan Knodel in the 2021 session. He voted for a transgender sports ban for high school students. He has co-authored a transgender sports ban for college students. He has co-sponsored bills which ban some type of gender-affirming care for minors. So again, the record is out there. And, Wendy, in our last segment, we played comments that Congressman Mark Pocan made on the floor of the House yesterday about if you really want to get involved and be an advocate for women and girls in athletics, there are so many large issues that are out there that really focusing on the few trans athletes participating in team sports sounds a lot less like protection and a lot more like politically sanctioned bullying.
It is. And it's really a distraction from some of their bigger picture. But, you know, what they're trying to do is they're trying to erase transgender non-binary people. They're coming after the LGBTQ plus community. And they're really trying to put us back in the closet. And it's really dangerous. And we're really, you know, this is why the HRC is out there. We're needing people to get out and vote. Make sure you get out and vote April 4th or before. Make sure you vote absentee in person.
That's right.
This election is crucial.
And you can do that at myvote.wi.gov to learn more about the Human Rights Campaign, hrc.org. Wendy Strout, thank you very much for the visit. We appreciate the information.
Thank you so much for having us. Have a great day.
Yeah, you have a great weekend yourself. And we will have more coming up right after this break with Mark Jacob. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
If you want to know about any other suckers, you can read it in the Sunday papers.
We are joined now by Mark Jacob, author and former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times. And Mark, it's good to see you. Sorry, got a little coffee frog going on here. But I'm going to start by, you know, folks who were listening in our first hour caught this, but I want to bring it up again and start from the standpoint of how journalists frame their stories. Because we had President Biden put out his budget proposal yesterday in Pennsylvania. And of course, we had Governor Tony Evers put forward his budget proposal about 3 weeks ago now. And in both cases, there were newsrooms that described these proposals as dead on arrival, which makes absolutely no sense because they're supposed to be. They're the opening right. of a negotiation. And, you know, Mark, when I see journalists framing something like that, I just know that that's not good for the public view of how government works. And it works as a negotiation, not as something where you dismiss the other side. That's just their opening salvo.
Yeah, but part of the some political journalism, bad political journalism, has to cast everything as conflict. I mean, and that's, you know, you've always been taught in storytelling that conflict is extremely important, and therefore they got to turn everything into a fight. And granted, this is going to ultimately become a fight, but it's also a negotiation. And you know, when you look at it that way, yes, Biden's budget the Republicans in the House aren't going to say, sure, yeah, why not? They're going to argue about it. They're going to negotiate about it. You know, every single bill that the House Republicans have passed so far has been dead on arrival. It's not going to get passed by the Senate. So, I mean, is the news media casting it that way? I don't think so. You know, Pat, the thing that coverage that bothered me even more about coverage was just saying Biden is going to raise taxes. Well, Biden's going to raise taxes on people who earn more than $400,000 a year. On people who earn more than $400,000 a year, that's kind of a major detail that ought to be included. The New York Times had a headline that said simply, Biden's going to raise taxes. You know, and they could have worked in the words on high earners because that was the fact.
And it tells the whole story. Right. It tells the whole story instead of just raising taxes. Now, there's something similar to that, and I believe you posted about this week as well, was prioritizing feelings over facts. And I believe it was a headline, and I've seen a few of these that say, you know, the economy looks great or the numbers look great. Why do people feel so bad about it? And it's like, again, we're talking about a self-fulfilling prophecy here.
Right. Right. Well, that's there is this, Republicans have really, you know, capitalized on that with election, you know, allegations, because, you know, the more they talk about it, the more people think that our elections aren't free and fair, even though they are, by and large, overwhelmingly free and fair, proven in courts, proven everywhere. But the more they talk about it, the more people feel like our elections aren't fair. And then the Republicans, it's a feedback loop. The Republicans say, well, people don't think elections are fair. And so so there is this attempt to capitalize on feelings over facts. You know, also that same issue is you'll always see in crime coverage because, you know, interestingly, you know, crime does seem to be up in some, you know, significant categories in some places in the United States right now, though not overall overwhelmingly everywhere. But, you know, obviously that's all that some people want to talk about. But anyway, what I'm saying is what I wanted to say is that 10 or 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when crime was dramatically falling in this country, you know, in almost every measure, they still, when they did polls of people, people still thought that crime was going up, you know, in public opinion polls. They still thought it was going up because there was this, that's how they felt, you know, because somebody they knew had got, you know, their car burglarized the other day or something.
Or they'd seen all this coverage of it, much like the, yes. I found the specific headline you were talking about was in Business Insider. The headline says, layoffs are historically low. Why does it feel like everyone's getting laid off? Where you've got two sentences and the second sentence completely diminishes the facts in the first sentence.
Right, right. And really, the fact is that the joblessness is way down, really incredibly low. It's a good news story. People are not getting laid off by and large because companies have got to keep people. And so that's a story. I mean, that's, you know, the fact that you can find, you know, six people somewhere or somebody quote somebody on Twitter as saying that, oh, the economy's bad does not mean the economy's bad. It's not bad. Also, Pat, you know, when I say something like that, I don't mean that every aspect of the economy is great. I mean, yeah, inflation is higher than it should be. And pretty easily explained by the fact that we had to pump a bunch of money into the economy to make up for the fact that we had a big crash when COVID hit. So that happened, put a bunch of money in the system. Inflation is, you know, it shoots up, it's high, and they're working to bring it down pretty steadily. And so not every aspect of the economy is great, but overall the economy is actually quite healthy. And the funny thing is that they're saying the Fed keeps on trying to raise interest rates so that people will stop buying stuff. And they can't get people to stop buying stuff. And that's why the Fed is really at a loss to how to really tamp down inflation, because people keep on buying stuff. Well, why do they keep on buying stuff? Because their own personal finances seem pretty good.
That's the story that can be told. But instead, you get these twists in a story. And Jay Rosen called my attention to this one in the New York Times, and now we're transitioning to Fox News and the Dominion lawsuit and everything else. And in this one New York Times article from a couple of days back, it includes this line: Fox News has been the most trusted and watched source of information for conservative America for decades. When you're going to use a phrase like most trusted, when they are the very definition of adjudicated liars,
right.
I would question the next sentence in that paragraph about Fox having difficulty meeting its promise to maintain journalistic standards of fairness and factuality. When did they start doing that? I'm sorry, here's spoiler alert, the answer is never.
Right. Well, they promised. That's the thing. And so they're hanging it on the promise instead of on the failure to deliver. That's the thing about the whole way that Fox News is treated by some news media and by some people in all realms of authority in this country, is that they give them too much credit. They act like, well, they're just they're the conservative side of the news media. No, they're not, Pat. I mean, it's like, and I love a variety of opinions in news media. I am totally for having, you know, some news media who are going to report on one angle of the abortion issue, some on the other, or on whether we should have health care for everyone or we should have, you know, no health care controlled by government. Those are all like legitimate things to argue about. But facts are not legitimate things to lie about. And the fact that that Fox News has been caught red-handed lying. And I don't mean like saying things that they thought were true that aren't true. Things that they knew were not true, they said anyway. The whole way that whole Dominion lawsuit stuff plays out, you look at all the internal communications, you're looking at a news organization that told the truth on election night about Arizona and immediately went into panic mode because, oh, they screwed up and told the truth. It was like the thing that they really didn't want to do is to tell the truth. And oh my gosh, we told the truth, and everyone on the right is mad at us for telling the truth. They had internal discussions about whether they would take back the call of Arizona and undo it, even though it was right and proved to be right, and was way ahead. And so what, they screwed up and told the truth, and they went into panic mode, and they immediately decided they had to start boosting all these incredible liars. And, you know, and all the internal communications say, boy, this person's crazy. Boy, Rudy Giuliani doesn't know what he's talking about. Boy, Sidney Powell, that lawyer, she's nuts. She has no evidence. I caught her lying to me. That's the kind of things they say in their internal communications. Yet they keep on putting Sidney Powell on the air to lie about, you know, crazy crap like that. That Hugo Chavez, who died many years earlier, is behind like some conspiracy to steal the American election. And so this is not about whether you're on the right or the left, or whether how you feel about a specific issue. This is about whether you lie or tell the truth. And if you lie, you're not legitimate journalism. In fact, the truth of it is, and I'll get off this rant in a second, Pat, and let you talk, but I've got to tell you that Fox is anti-journalism. It's not journalism. It's desire and its purpose and its mission is to knock down legitimate journalism. When you look at Fox, which I don't do much anymore, but I used to, they like to run down all the other news media because they want to keep their people in a bubble where they can believe their lies.
This one just occurred to me, so pardon the question's a bit speculative, but it seems to me when we're talking about the Dominion lawsuit against Fox and what if anything would really come of this? I mean, there was a news site, admittedly much smaller, but wasn't it Gawker that basically had to go out of business because of court rulings against it, because of its practices or whatever the case may be? I mean, this Dominion lawsuit is big. The revelations are big. Is there any chance that it could rise to the level of crippling Fox to the point where they say, we're like Gawker, we can't stay in business?
Well, the problem with that is that Fox is part of, you know, Fox Corporation. Fox News is part of Fox Corporation, which, you know, controls a lot, has a lot of local affiliates, has Fox Sports. You know, the Super Bowl was on Fox this year. So, I mean, I would have to say that Rupert Murdoch has plenty, you know, deep enough pockets to survive this. But you know, taking a billion or two away from Rupert Murdoch's got to be a really good thing. The thing about this whole thing is what would be even more valuable for American society is if the people who watched Fox News were told that Fox was caught red-handed lying in one of the most important stories in modern American history. But they won't be told that. In fact, Howard Kurtz said on the air on Fox, in one of the very few times they've even mentioned the Dominion lawsuit, Howard Kurtz, the media critic there, said that he couldn't talk about it, that he was ordered not to talk about it.
It makes me wonder, much like sometimes people or entities are forced to publish corrections or retractions. And again, just wild blue yonder speculating, if part of some kind of a settlement would be that they actually have to run announcements that say, you know, we are aware that we don't tell the truth about this or that. And, you know, again, let the viewers see it. Because, look, a lot of us have gone to, there's a website called Unfox My Cable Box, because I'm certainly tired of, you know, a big chunk of my cable bill goes directly to Fox, and I don't want that. I want to be able to not have them get any of my money. That's one thing, but until you actually get to the people watching it, this is going to be something we continue to, you know, wring our hands over.
Well, it does. A lot of people have talked about that. If there is a settlement, and, you know, legal experts think that, you know, that Fox has got to go for a settlement because the evidence in this case is so damaging that, you know, and the stuff that we've seen on so far, some of that's redacted at Fox's request. So you would think that the redactions are even worse than what we've already seen. And what we've already seen is just awful. I mean, it's like, it is the worst, one of the worst scandals for a media company that I can ever think of. I mean, it's just terrible. I mean, they've been caught just pretty much conspiring to lie to their audience. And so, and if they do settle, part of a settlement would be negotiating the wording and the frequency of some sort of statements they would make on the air to their viewers. Now, the thing about that, Pat, is the thing that really kind of bums me out is that I think a lot of the people who watch Fox want to be lied to.
Oh yeah, these are things they want to believe. They've told me that. Like, I want to believe that it's the case. And we'll end here by quoting again Jay Rosen from New York University, who says, one sign of a mature news organization is that it often has to say to its core audience, you may not like this, but it happened. Doing news requires a bond strong enough to withstand the strain of telling uncomfortable truths. Here, Fox is weak. And I think that's how we'll tie a bow on it, is that Fox is weak. It's not engaged in news, but it'll continue to do what it does until either court does something or enough folks like us shine a light on it. Mark Jacob, thanks as much as always. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you later.
All right. We'll take this break and then come back with Dan Schumacher, who will talk about the weekend in sports, and we'll have other calendar notes that we want to share coming up as well. This is Up North News Radio for a Friday. Read all about it, Sunday papers. Read all about it, Sunday papers. Read all about it, Sunday papers. Get your Sunday paper, get your Sunday paper. Get your read all about it, Sunday papers. This one isn't actually for Dan this week. Normally, we would play a Grateful Dead tune to welcome in Dan Schumacher, but I happen to know the woman crazy enough to still be married to me is probably listening on her drive home after working overnights. So we play one of her favorite songs in order to say happy birthday, Sherry.
Happy birthday, Sherry.
I knew Dan would join me in that, so... There you go. That's as big as it gets when you've been together almost 40 years. You get a happy birthday.
Yep.
It works out all right.
It's just another day.
Yep. And poor Dan here. I was watching. Thank goodness we didn't have the mics potted up. He might have sworn as he was listening to the forecast. But, Dan, I remind you, we get the Madison radio station feed in. So we're not going to get that much more snow. This is just
I thought 3 to 5 here. I'm like, enough is enough. I'm done.
Look, even when Michael Cairo earlier in the program mentioned that a clipper was coming through, we're at the time of year now where I hear clipper and I just laugh because we know a clipper never brings you a dump of snow. It just, you know, comes through, sprinkles a little fairy dust and moves on its way. We're getting there. We're almost there. Come on, we're talking about the World Baseball Classic and spring training. The end is in sight, I think.
I hope so. I hope spring comes a lot sooner than later.
Because it means we're one day closer to eventually not hearing anything more about Aaron Rodgers. My God, there were reports last night like, oh, it's a done deal with the Jets. And then other people were like, no, that's not what the reporter said. You know, trying to parse the words of what does considering compensation really mean? And it's like, ugh, can we get done with this?
Yeah, right on. I mean, I'm actually more interested. I already believe that Rodgers is going to the Jets. I would like to see what the compensation to the Packers is.
Yes.
What kind of draft picks do they get? What kind of compensation? Because I think the fans they're already coming to grips with that he's moving on. But the question is, what are you going to get for him? And does he still bring value enough that are they going to undersell this to the Jets? I mean, is Goody going to take only like one draft pick, or is he going to try to get the biggest loot to bring home he could for the draft this year? I don't know, but I think the fans would be more interested in what they get for him than him actually leaving.
Especially since, yes, he does still have immense value. He is mm-hmm. fried here. He has burned bridges here. But again, the parallels to Favre, I mean, the deja vu going on here, you know, it's the Jets. And Favre did not do a bad job with the Jets. And then he went to the Vikings and really found his groove and came that close, you know, apart from being almost literally dismembered, you know, in New Orleans, he was that close to getting the Vikings to a Super Bowl. And I don't have any reason to think Rodgers wouldn't do the same for some other team. Of course, he still has value.
Oh, he's got a lot of value. He's still a great player. I just don't, you know, as a former football player, I like to know what he's like in the locker room, and I would like to know what he's like as a teammate. I don't see any of his teammates rushing to the media or making statements that we want to keep Aaron. Nobody's really waving that flag, you know. His offensive line is not. You think back to Ari, the big tackle, who they seem to have a relationship with each other. I haven't heard anything from him. Of course, Cobb is gone. He's retiring, basically. So it's so weird. I don't know if he's a good teammate or not. I just haven't been able to figure that out yet.
Who did? It was Derek Carr. Did he just leave the Raiders and go to another team? And
yes, he was released.
He was released. And who did the Raiders replace him with? But why would you?
They have not replaced him yet.
Well, why wouldn't they put him with Devontae Adams again? I mean, boy, I'm surprised I haven't heard any of that speculation. So here, the rumor is starting right now.
Right.
Up North News Radio is reporting. The Milwaukee Bucks did not have Giannis last night, still managed to beat Brooklyn 118 to 113. Brooke Lopez, very impressive. 9 blocks, most in the NBA this season. Bobby Portis, 28 points. Giannis nursing a sore wrist. I don't know that you heard this earlier, Dan, but the Nets starting five, they're so banged up. The starting five scored 15 combined points. They got 98 points from the bench, the most ever since the NBA started tracking bench points in 1970. You got a starting five problem when you need your bench to score 98 points.
Right. That's going deep into the bench.
You really are. Bucks next are at Golden State Saturday night. Marquette is still the number one seed in the Big East tournament. They nearly screwed that one up, shall we say. And they managed to force overtime and then beat the number 8 seed Butler 72-70. They will advance to play UConn in a semifinal tonight at Madison Square Garden. And then that takes us to the Badgers. I thought maybe we'd still be talking about them in a Big Ten tournament. Oh, we are not.
Yeah, you know, I'm anxious to see where Gard lands here, if he's going to get another year. I hope he does. I think Coach Gard's a good guy. I know him personally. I think he's a wonderful teacher of the game. I think he's got tremendous patience. I think his players, you even saw in the second half, even though they were down by 20 points, they still came back. They didn't quit. They didn't quit on Coach Gard. So I hope he comes back. I hope he has a chance to redeem this season that kind of was up and down, inconsistent. The Wall kid is the real deal. I think they need somebody who can handle the ball a little bit better and a little bit more guard shooting. You know, they lost that with Johnny Davis, that outside shot when he went to the pros this year. So, I was hoping they would make a run in here. If they would have won 2 games in the Big Ten tournament, they probably would be an NCAA tournament team. Mm-hmm. And save the season, but that's not the case right now.
No, it does not. All right, your day job involves the WIAC, and yep. So we're getting to crunch time there. Why don't you take us around the conference, tell us some of the highlights from the Blue Golds and other teams.
Well, Blue Golds did lose in the first round to Whitman College down at the University of Chicago this past Saturday night, but other WIAC teams, both Whitewater basketball teams have advanced to the Sweet 16. And you have Oshkosh, same, both men and women have moved on to the Sweet 16 at different locations. So the WIAC is very strong, very well represented in the basketball realm of Division III. Hockey NCAA playoffs start this week. Stevens Point represents men's hockey in River Falls, UW River Falls for women, and that all starts this week. But wrestling nationals, we've got four wrestlers at nationals out in Roanoke, Virginia. Along with a couple other WIAC schools, the lacrosse and Whitewater have some people that advanced to the finals as well, like we did. But it's all about spring sports right now. I mean, we've already played 2 weekends of softball over in Rochester in their dome in Rochester, Minnesota. And the teams are gearing up to go on spring break starting on Friday. And most of the WIAC will be in Florida, both softball and baseball, getting their season started.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't realize till a couple weeks back I was driving through Rochester and saw that there was a dome there. Didn't even know they had something like that there.
Yep, Rochester has a junior college football program, and that's the stadium that they play in, and then they bubble it in the wintertime. So it's teams come from all over just to be able to get games in there.
Very cool. All right, Dan Schumacher. Hey, thank you so much. I'm sure I'll be seeing you a little bit later on as well today.
Yeah, a little birthday fun.
Yeah.
For Queen Sherry.
There you go. All right. Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend. Yeah, all right. Too. That'll do it for us here on Friday. And as I mentioned earlier, the next couple of weeks, I will be in and out with this and that. So we'll run some best of shows on days when I can't be around. But then I'll be back with a week to go until the big Supreme Court election. So go to myvote.wi.gov to get your absentee ballot and learn more. Have a great weekend.